This is PodTech News. I'm Catherine Giraudot. Google's co-founder Sergey Brin was in Washington this past week. While he was there, he hinted to the press that Google might be rethinking its China strategy. Google.cn, Google's China website, complies with Chinese government censorship of certain search terms. Those in the know have generally been able to also access Google's uncensored Google.com site there. But international media watchdog group Reporters Without Borders said this week that China had recently been blocking access to Google.com. While reports Friday said the blockage seems to have been lifted, the whole scenario brings up some of the ethical questions U.S. internet companies have to grapple with in order to do business in China. To shed some light, we went to talk with Ward Hansen at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research. He's the Policy Forum Director and a research fellow there. Hansen analyzes the economics and marketing of new technology and has recently done research in China. I asked Hansen to describe the situation internet companies like Google face.
Well, at the heart of the debate is the longstanding issue about whether it's better to be a participant and to be working in a society that is expanding, opening up, and changing, and whether Google does more good by being there, even if they have some compromises, or at some point whether the compromises are too extreme, and not only it's not providing the service that they would want to, but the negative impacts are starting to filter back here as well. So both in public image and reputation, morale of the organization, and also to the extent that they're creating capabilities to satisfy the Chinese government, whether U.S. users and world users start fearing that those same technologies might be applied elsewhere.
But they did say, you know, when they initially chose to go into China, I think it was about 5 or 6 months ago, they said, well, it's better to offer Chinese users something rather than nothing.
Well, they did make some decisions that I think alleviated some of the pressure. It might be useful to step back a bit and just to draw a distinction of two different kinds of involvement by, say, the Chinese state security. One would be blocking or filtering, where some of the material that is available in the public internet isn't visible from the China. So that had the most notable ones that have been tracked and observed are things involving democracy, the group Falun Gong, a few other key terms, Tiananmen Square, you know, the sort of politically charged phrases that the Communist Party wants to limit access to.
And essentially it's search terms that they're blocking.
The filtering is about search terms. Now, there's another kind of involvement that, in my mind, is much more serious and much more durable, and that's tracking, where you go into an internet cafe, you have to register as a user. Reputedly, all of the internet cafes have cameras to verify identity, and so that individual internet activity can be tracked back to the specific individual. So that's very different and has many more serious consequences, both for the individuals involved, but also for the usefulness of the internet to the Chinese society, or actually in any setting. Once individuals are worried that their every search and every click and every action online can be traced back to them, tracked, possibly misinterpreted, possibly revealed to be antisocial or anti-government, then people will take actions and the internet will be much less useful than it otherwise could be.
So what is the usefulness of U.S. companies, internet companies, going into China if, in fact, they could be putting Chinese citizens at risk?
Well, one reason that Google eliminated some of their normal features from the Chinese setting was not to comply with the Chinese government, but rather to remove the possibility of this individual tracking. So they entered China in a way which, yes, it blocked some of the material that we would think is the right of the Chinese citizens to see, but they didn't add some of the capabilities such as email, which would be much more problematical from the individual tracking point of view. And companies such as Yahoo have revealed individual usage patterns, and they've been traced back to specific individuals that then have run into trouble with the authorities. So it's the capabilities that you're providing also make it more or less serious whether or not it'll be about blocking material or actually providing ongoing records of individual usage.
Do you think that Google should in any way change its strategy in China?
It's a tough decision. I mean, I think what they're doing right now is also, frankly, because China is already the second largest internet user base in the world. That's remarkable, how fast they've grown. They will presumably, unless something very, very unusual and dramatic changes about their trajectory, become the largest internet user base in the world in the next few years, surpassing the U.S. And it's very difficult if you're an internet company, and especially an internet company that tries to be the first stop of every internet user's activity, to walk away from the largest market. So the fundamental problem they face is how to participate in China without compromising their ethics, without doing something they don't want to do, and without creating the fear in their worldwide user base that they're no longer the service they purport to be. Also, you have the problem that they face local competitors who are very strong and have a position that they will be the provider of choice, that have much closer connections to the authorities, have no qualms whatsoever about enforcing the rules. Now, as an economist, or as someone looking at it from the business point of view as well, you have to ask yourself maybe simpler questions about, is this something Google should be participating in? Are there strategies that they can do that limit these negative consequences? One thing they did do about only providing some of their services, display information being blocked, you know, indicating that this is less than is available, providing some capabilities for access through the normal Google database of information. You know, there's a number of strategies and a number of ways of approaching this and drawing the line. And it's not just the information providers. It's also the companies like Cisco that are providing routers that comply with certain tracking capabilities. And so this is a sort of endemic problem. Hopefully, you know, the ideal solution is China changes.
Well, you've spoken publicly about making the internet work in China or for China. What are some of the things that you've thought about and written about?
Well, one of the basic tensions is that the internet technology has a certain natural trajectory that it's going on. We've seen that with things going digital. And, you know, everyone knows about Moore's Law and how that keeps getting more and more power, cheaper and cheaper access. We've seen the power of the network, that groups get to share information and you have important hubs of information. So this idea that as the network grows and connects these digital devices, I've written recently about what I think is also, the technical term is general purpose technology, but it basically means a whole cluster of innovations. So we've seen a whole cluster of innovations around digital. We've seen a whole cluster of innovations around networking. And I actually think that the real difficulty of this debate is that individualization, the idea of treating people as an individual, treating information as described and specific information, is an emerging general purpose technology. And so many of the things that we're talking about in terms of censorship or tracking or the negative consequences, the flip side of that is your local website being able to personalize or your cell phone knowing the information that you want to have follow you on a day-to-day basis, or a secure login to your online banking, or ability to filter out spam. So this individualization has many, many good things. And at the same time, in the wrong hands, is a powerful technology for things we don't like. And when put in that context, it makes you actually understand the challenge and more sympathetic to Google and Yahoo, that it's hard to draw a line. It's almost like saying there are some negative things that could put into digital pictures or digital cameras. How do we control that without eliminating the technology? Well, it's very challenging, especially if this whole cluster of capabilities is emerging with many good uses. How do we as a society learn to isolate and put around bounds of negative things that we want to not happen? So that's why it's a tough challenge. And I'm perhaps more sympathetic to the sort of deep tensions in this issue than just reading the newspaper, reading the headlines.
How would you recommend companies operate going forward? Companies working, internet companies working in China or who want to work in China?
One thing they could do is follow the lead of companies operating in the U.S. that have well-specified privacy policies. At least inform people what you're doing. So at a minimum, put out there exactly what you're being asked to do. Disclose if under subpoena or under regular interference, or if there's in a society that doesn't require subpoenas, simply, we will provide this information covering these actions of online users if requested by government officials in this country. At the minimum, inform people of what's going on.
Well, just in closing, why don't you tell our listeners the title of your book and when it's coming out?
It'll be coming out this summer. It's Internet Marketing and E-Commerce by Thomson Publishing. It'll be available on Amazon.com, and I think it covers a wide range of issues about how the Internet can be used effectively as part of business and part of marketing, but also how it changes the practice of business.
It's been really great talking with you, Ward Hansen, who's the Policy Forum Director and Research Fellow at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research. Thank you so much for being on PodTech News.